this is Mary J. Blige.
I'm Nicki Minaj.
What's up? This is Jay-Z.
From London, England and Washington, D.C., you are now tuned in to Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here, brought to you by Ethel May Books. This is Conversations with Allison J. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here. Today, as always, we have another captivating and thought-provoking topic and guest. Here's your host, Allison J.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here. I'm your host, Allison J. Today, I welcome our guest, Liz Farrier. Liz is a licensed independent social worker with a bachelor's in child development from Tufts University and a master's in social work from Columbia University. Liz has recently started her own therapy practice, working with children both in the foster care system and those who are not. Liz will be sharing some of her experiences working as a social worker with foster children and giving us some insight into the foster care and adoption process. Liz, thank you for joining us here on Conversations with Allison J. Welcome. One of the reasons I wanted to speak to you is last week I had a conversation with the founder of World Childless Week. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh.
I had no idea it was a thing. And it started in 2017. In its first year, it was retweeted 1.2 million times.
Wow.
And by the second year, it was in 85 countries.
Is that, so it's for infertility? Is it an infertility?
So it's World Childless Week, and it really speaks to those people that are childless, not by choice.
Okay.
So a lot of it is around surrounding infertility and the struggles of infertility. And the beautiful thing about that is it's a space for both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things I've often encountered is if you want a subject matter expert on anything that's and you wanted a woman, you can find a woman to talk about anything all day, every day. But, but it's true, right? Regardless of the topic, you can find a woman to think about it. And so, but one of the things I wanted to do, I wanted to hear the voice of men on a lot of subjects that are really touchy, sensitive, and surprisingly a lot of men actually deal with, but because they don't hear another man's voice, they're more inclined to not speak on it. And so when I was speaking to Stephanie last week, she's the founder of World Childless Week, she was telling me about the challenges of adoption, because people automatically say, and I've heard it because I've had my own challenges with not being able to, I've had to carry a child to term. Mm-hmm. So it's always, oh, you can just adopt. Like, mm-hmm. it's that easy. I can just pop down, you know, I can just pop along to the shop and just go and pick one up with my potatoes and my carrots.
Right.
But it's a whole process that you have to go through. And I've seen a couple of really heartbreaking stories recently, where, like, after I read yours about Stephen, but a few weeks ago I read one about another little boy who desperately wants to be adopted. And you know, the older they get, the harder it is. So that's why, Liz, I want to speak to you, someone who has actually worked as a social worker, worked with children that are in foster care and adoption. And I just wanted to hear from you, somebody that works in that field, what is the process? And I know you may not be able to really fully speak to the effect it has on the children, but from what you've seen, the effect on the children in the what do you call it, the system, for want of a better expression.
Yeah.
And just what it does to them and your experiences. And if you wouldn't mind talking about your experience with Stephen, because that really was just so heartrending hearing about what happened to him.
Yeah. So when people are thinking about adoption, I think there's this, I'll just start back a little teeny bit, which is there's different ways you can approach adoption. I mean, there's kids in foster care that are eligible for adoption. There's the kind of private infant adoption, which I think is what most people probably have in mind. Like you go through it privately and adopt a baby, you know, straight from the hospital kind of thing. And then there's international adoption. So there's three different tracks you could consider. Okay. I've only worked with the kids in the foster care system. We'll talk about, I like to say this because this is a big misconception. When people talk about adoption being too expensive, they're talking really about private infant adoption and adoption. Both of those can be quite expensive in terms of
legal. A little bit there. Private adoption and, there was two you mentioned.
Yeah, so private infant adoption would be if you were trying to adopt a baby and you were putting yourself out there to get matched with a pregnant woman who would have to select your family or you as the adoptive parent. That can be very challenging because a lot of people want healthy babies and you have to get kind of picked. There can be a long wait and it can be quite expensive. There's also international adoption, which can be kids of all different ages who are in orphanages or foster care internationally. That can also be a long process and expensive. So those, what I've dealt with kids in the U.S. foster care system. So our, you know, kids in the system in America. That's a totally different ball game. And that's when I talk about Steven, Steven's a kid in that situation. Okay. So there are a ton of kids in the U.S. foster care system. Only a small subset of those kids are going to go on to be up for adoption. So when kids are initially removed from their biological parents, it's because there's a concern of abuse or neglect. Sexual abuse, physical abuse, could be prenatal drug exposure possibly, or significant neglect. So that's why a kid would get taken from their biological parents to start with and would be placed into a foster home. Not strictly because of something like poverty, like a kid wouldn't go into foster care for that alone. So there's some abuse or neglect for every kid. Care. The smaller portion that goes on to be on the adoption track are kids whose parents have gone through the process and really don't have a chance of getting those kids legally back in their care. So those kids are called, they could be considered legal risk, which means that the parents are still fighting to get them back, or legally free. And if they're legally free, it means they're free and clear for adoption because their parents have lost rights in court. And they're not going to go home.
Okay.
So those are kind of the kids that are available for adoption. In terms of the type of kids, that ranges in age from newborns up through kids that are 21. I mean, you can have kids that are, you can be adopted really at any age. I'm saying 21, that's a rarity, but teenagers, there's tons of teenagers and young adults that are still looking to be adopted. Kids over 18 would be much less common, but still possible. That want to be adopted or need to be adopted. So the age ranges across the boards. And we get, you know, people that are looking to adopt run the gamut. I mean, some people are coming because they have infertility issues and really want to start a family and are open to, you know, considering a kid with this kind of history, a tough history. And other people don't have any fertility issues at all and just really like the idea of taking in a kid that really needs a family. Maybe they have grown kids and still would like to add to their family and think foster care is a good way to do that. So we get all kinds of families that look to do adoption through foster care. To be eligible, I mean, you can be single, you can be in a couple, you can be older, younger, gay, straight, you know, rich, poor, you know, tons of different families come looking to adopt. And there are agencies that will work with all different types of families. You do have to be, you know, the kids that are coming out of the system do have, like I said, trauma histories. There's not going to be any kid in the system that does not have a trauma history. Even if it's a newborn baby, that kid has either been drug exposed or, well, probably drug exposed if it's a newborn baby. So there's going to be something. You're not, if you're looking for just kind of a smooth kind of clean slate, that doesn't really exist. And parents do have to understand that these kids have that kind of trauma history and need additional supports because of that.
Yeah, that's good to know, because you know what it's like. I think we all are guilty of watching a little bit too much television, aren't we, really? And we've got that whole fairy tale of this child, this perfect child with no issues, no trauma, right. No nothing,
right.
Being taken and swooped up into this family, and they all ride off into the sunset and live happily ever after. And that actually is the rarity.
It doesn't never happen. I mean, I've worked with kids that have gone through the system and have a trauma history or neglect history and do great. You know, some of the kids really do great. Most every kid I've ever worked with, I've felt is lovable. I mean, the kids are lovable. They're they're not these kind of alien children. Like, what's going on with these children? They're kids that have a difficult history. Mm-hmm. So they have special needs. Now it's considered, kids in foster care, they call that special needs adoption. People get a little confused on that terminology because it doesn't mean the kids have kind of a cognitive special need necessarily, mm-hmm. or a physical
special need. Like a learning disability, because when you say special needs, that's probably where most people's minds go to. Yeah. For example, they may be dyslexic or something like that, but special needs automatically mean a learning disability or a learning difficulty.
No, it doesn't mean that in the case of kids in foster care. They could have those kind of issues, of course. Like, kids have all kinds of issues. But special needs adoption are for harder to place kids coming through foster care. Mm. The whole unit I worked on was called special needs adoptions.
Okay.
But a lot of the kids didn't have sort of like an organic special need. They did have special needs in that their emotional states were more precarious because they've been through really difficult losses, and some of them very significant abuse histories. Not all equal. I mean, a kid like Steven, I actually liked his biological mom. I knew her really well because I worked with their family for so long. But, you know, I won't go into all of his stuff, but he had a significant abuse and neglect history, but was also, it's called foster care drift when kids bump from home to home. Right. Steven, I talk about in the story, was bumped all over the place. I mean, he was in many, many placements. And to be fair to the foster families, he could be a very challenging kid when his behaviors escalated. But every subsequent move does more and more damage to a kid like that. Well, so you get a little boy that's, you know, I'm going to cry thinking about him, but he was my favorite kid that I ever worked with. He was probably, I just loved him. He was an excellent kid. And when I met him, he's the same age as my oldest son is now. He was 7 when I met him. He's just a little boy. So he was a really, really good kid. But he did, you know, he was difficult in families. And every time he would have kind of like an outburst or not just a little tantrum, but a real kind of meltdown, he could be very hard. And what happens a lot is when you know, a kid like Steven, he had been doing really well actually in his foster home when I met him, but it wasn't a permanent placement. It was a temporary foster home. And the state needs to find kids like that a permanent placement.
Mm-hmm.
It means taking them out of a home they're actually doing quite well in, because it's not a permanent home. It's a temporary placement. And you're looking for that adoptive family. Now, sometimes that goes great. And sometimes for a kid like Steven, it ends up in retrospect more damage than good, because he kept getting bumped around after that. We would place him within a pre-adoptive family, mm-hmm. that couldn't really manage him as well as like his foster parent had managed him. Mm-hmm. And you know, the losses kind of mount for a kid like that until you get a kid who's really dysregulated, really not doing well. Now with a kid like Steven, the fact that he was murdered is not typical, but the fact that he had a bad outcome of kids that don't ever get adopted and age out of foster care, mm-hmm. bad outcomes are all over the place. So I would say he is typical in that the outcome for kids, the outlook for kids that never get adopted, that go through foster care and age out at 18 or 21, mm-hmm. is not good. I mean, the rates of kids ending up incarcerated or homeless or pregnant very early and unable to manage that are high, because the kids don't ever have that lifelong support that they really need.
Okay. And the stability that comes along with being in a family. They don't have that.
No, they don't have it. So what are those kids supposed to do? Think of yourself at 18, you know, with no family, no support. You've had been placed all over the place, no stable adult. They don't tend to do very well. Of course, there's always exceptions, and some kids will do well and find their way. And I do know some kids that have done reasonably well that did age out. You know, other kids that I've worked with that I really like that have aged out and done okay, and some pretty well. But the outlook for those kids is not particularly good. So I think Stephen, I mean, that article went nuts. I mean, that's gone viral like year after year because people are so taken aback by what happened with him. And the interesting thing to me as a social worker is that his story is pretty typical. Not getting murdered, but the rest of his story.
But that's what I was going to ask you, though, Liz, because if you think about it, the fact that it's gone viral year after year and people are taken aback by it, but should they really be? Because the sad part about it is we have really, if we're honest, we have heard a lot of stories like Stephen's, haven't we?
Yep. So and people, I think they don't, I think with that particular essay or whatever, I think people can identify with him because you could feel kind of what he's going through. But his story, it's heartbreaking, but it's not that uncommon. It's really not. Again, you know, gang violence, murders and stuff also are not that uncommon. He had kind of a perfect, I don't know if he was in a gang or not in a gang. He was shot at a party at 18. I don't know if it was gang related. I had concerns it was, just by the way his services were handled and how many precautions were taken and whatnot. You know, I'm not really sure. I don't know, but I do know that people see kids like that kind of as like this punk kid or whatever. And if you ever knew a kid like that from earlier years and from growing up and what a kid like that's been through, I mean, he was a great kid. He was a really, really special kid. You know, you want kids like that to be humanized because you want people to understand these are real children.
Exactly.
So I haven't cried thinking about him in a while, but I he would have been, let's see. I mean, he'd be well into his 20s right now. You know, a lot of people were, because the article's gotten seen so, and people have asked, like, why didn't I adopt him? And in the article, I didn't want to get into that because that's a whole convoluted, not really relevant part of this. Right. But I was basically a kid. I was a 21-year-old social worker. You know, I was still living with my parents. Like I was a kid. He was like I had no wherewithal to be adopted.
Look after at 21, living with your parents. You didn't have the resources to do that.
Yeah. No, I just wasn't, and also, social workers don't really adopt the kids on their caseload. That's also, you're working with tons of kids you come to care about and love, but your role is to find them an adoptive family. Your role isn't to adopt all those kids. You couldn't adopt all those kids. Could you potentially adopt a kid from a different agency? Of course. But adopting like your own caseload is not really the way that the way that works. But, you know, like story really was emblematic of kind of things that go wrong in the system despite people's good intentions. Like we all worked hard on that case. I did, but everyone else did also. There's no villain really. You know, people trying to help this kid. And he's not a villain and no one, you know, there is not a villain. It's just kind of understanding that these kids are out there. A lot of them are out there. Way more than people think. There are Stevens everywhere in every town. So, I mean, I worked with plenty of kids after the fact, you know, in that same kind of group of kids, that same demographic that's gone through things. Now, for people wanting to adopt, could everyone manage to take a Steven? No, not everyone could. It's not, like you said, as simple as, oh, I couldn't, you know, get pregnant. Why don't I just go adopt a really troubled teenager? They're not, you know, it doesn't really work like that. You have to be called to want to do that. You have to really have a desire to parent a kid with a trauma history and really put in the effort that requires, which is above and beyond in most cases. It's hard. It's a challenging thing to do. Also,
something that you say you have to be called to do that, because Stephanie, who's based in the UK, those were pretty much her exact words.
Mm-hmm.
Because her and her husband, they were unable to naturally and biologically have their own children. And that's one of the things she was saying that kept being told to her, when obviously they would tell family and friends that they weren't able to. They're like, why don't you just adopt?
Right.
Just adopt. And right. She said pretty much what you've just said there, that you have to be called to be able to adopt, because it's not the easiest thing. Because she was saying to us about even the process that you have to go through, and the bureaucracy and all of the red tape and everything.
It's a lot. Yep.
What she was saying. And I thought it was, I find it quite interesting that if I wanted to have, like I've seen on the television, these families with like 19 children, and they don't live in a 19 bedroom house.
Yeah.
You know, there's no palace or mansion that they live in. If you wanted to biologically have children, you could have as many as you want. Doesn't matter if you're working, doesn't matter if you've got a bedroom for all of them, it doesn't matter. But when it comes to adoption, the boxes you have to check. Do you think, in your opinion, it's a bit too rigid, considering?
No, I don't actually. I think it's not as rigid as you're maybe perceiving it to be. So I'll put it this way: the system is desperate to find adoptive families for these kids. Mm-hmm. They want these kids to be adopted. They don't want them to stay in foster care. That's like what nobody wants.
Mm-hmm.
So I've worked with families that, you know, really have not a high income or really low income families that have plenty of other kids, families that have all kinds of scenarios, are able to adopt through foster care. It's now, of course, you need to have criminal background checks and things like that. Even those kind of things, if there's nothing that's too alarming. I mean, some people have some sort of criminal history, but that's, you're able to get a waiver for due to the nature of it. You know, if you're like a hardcore criminal, you're probably not going to be able to go through the system and adopt, as you should not be able to. But no, we work with, you don't need to be a privileged family in any way to adopt from foster care. You really, truly don't. So that's not, you don't need a big house. You need an apartment or whatever that's got at least some kind of private bedroom space.
Mm-hmm.
But the size for those bedroom spaces are very small. Like, I mean, the dimensions that you need are not large. It's like, okay, I don't want to say the wrong dimensions off the top of my head, but they're not, it's nothing elaborate. Mm-hmm. Kids can share bedrooms if they're same gender under like 7 or 8 years old. You need to be a stable person with a stable housing situation. But the parameters otherwise are really not very rigid. The process can be very challenging, though. So there's kind of two different things. I don't think the standards are like super high. They're mm-hmm. not. They're reasonable. But you do have to be trained. So there's a training course. In Massachusetts, it's called MAP training. Every state would have their own version, I'm assuming, of the trainings. But mm-hmm. it's like an 8-week, you know, in-person training for pre-adoptive and foster parents, because people come in so sort of naive to the kind of issues the kids might have and to what that could do to a family system if you're not prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to be trained. You have to get what's called a home study done. A home study is in any type of adoption, private, international, or foster care. And that's a series of interviews. A social worker like myself would come out and do a series of interviews with your family and kind of present like a long narrative of your whole life story, including any challenges you've had as a person, because to try to make a match with a kid that's appropriate. So, you know, if you have a adoptive parent that has a serious sexual abuse history and that's a trigger for them, you don't want to be placing a kid with a serious sexual abuse history in that home. That's going to trigger them. You know, you have to think through things like this. Anyway, so you go through the home study process, you get an approval, and then the matching part can be very tricky. So a lot of people get very frustrated waiting for a match because people will routinely say, like, how many kids in the system? Why can't I get a kid quicker, you know? And mm-hmm. the truth is, the match has to make sense. So if you come in and you're like, I'd like a girl ages 2 to 4 with only these type of issues, well, there might not be that. There might be 20 people that want that. So there has to be a match between you know, as the family, you get to pick all the issues you would consider, you know, race, gender, special needs, things like that. Your social worker would talk through those things with you to make sure you're really thinking them through properly. On both ways. Maybe you're being too narrow in what you're asking for and you could expand a little, or maybe you're being too broad and are not really thinking it through very well. So it can go both ways. You have to think, and you have to think through your community. You know, if you're a family, if you're a white family and you're in a very white area and you want to adopt a kid of color or are open to that, that could work. But do you have other people in your community that are going to, you know, be of the same background as that kid? How are you planning to integrate your kid's cultural needs into your life if you have no friends of that culture? You know, you have to think through things like this. And so it's a conversation back and forth. And same on the opposite side. You might have people saying like, I can't take any special needs of any sort. And then you go through the list and you're like, you know, you really wouldn't be able to to take a kid with dyslexia or like, you know, an eating problem, or maybe you could. Maybe you have to think through, like, there are some things you could actually consider, but you have to think them through. And then the matching process, you know, you've got social workers for kids and social workers for families. I've been both. I've been in both roles. The social worker for the kid, their job is to find a good family for that kid.
Okay.
Social worker for the family, their job is to find a good kid for that family.
Right. Okay.
You have kind of the player you're supporting. And they have, everyone's got to work together to make a match. They do things like adoption parties. I do reference that in the article, which some people question, like adoption parties, which is the kids go to an event and, you know, especially saying Stephen brought like his report card, you know, it can be very sad, you know, but generally I do support those because over the years I've seen them, they yield a lot of matches. And most, for the most part, the kids enjoy them. The kids, they're like kind of days out for the kids where they play with other kids and they're not as kind of, they don't feel very exploitive like I think people might imagine them to be. It's more adults, like social workers talking to parents, not kids talking to adults. It's the kids doing activities and the adults discussing, but it gives parents a chance to kind of meet kids in a less intense environment without putting the kids on the spot so much. So you can go play baseball with a kid for 15 minutes and not make the kid feel like you're interviewing them. You know, it's tricky because you're asking people to take a kid that's, it's not a newborn. It's a kid with a personality.
Yeah.
And just like in dating or something, like you do have to have a click. You know, there's good matches and matches that are just, you meet a kid and you're like, I don't feel any kind of rapport with this kid.
Yeah.
And the kids also have their say. The kid might feel no connection with you and can absolutely push back on that. Kids have to agree to be adopted after a certain age. I think it's 12.
Okay.
They can't just, you can't just make them be adopted. Yeah. Yeah. And even younger kids, you take their feedback into account.
Okay.
So a younger kid, you'd still want to make sure they like this family and feel comfortable, and you want it to work for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then if once a kid, so say there's a match made, is this okay level of detail? I could tell you a little more about that.
This is fine. This is absolutely great.
So if a match is made, then, and the kid is either free for adoption or probably will become free for adoption, then the child would always move into your home as a technically a foster child, not as an adopted child. So they'd move in as a foster child for a minimum of 6 months. And for, I don't know if there's any variation state to state. I'm in Massachusetts. That's the case here. I would think it's similar, but there might be state regulations that differ a little bit. But they move in for 6 months at least, and also freed in court. And that's kind of like a, you have to make sure the match is going well, you know, that there's not, because plenty of things do disrupt and people, kids get placed and then, you know, it's, they, the family and the kid don't do well together and the kids get put back in kind of the general group, which is very tough for kids and we really want to avoid. And that's what happened to Stephen a few different times. And plenty of other kids. That's very common and sad. So you try to avoid that, but sometimes it happens. But if it's going well after 6 months and the kid is freed in court, the parents don't have rights anymore. You can, you put in like the adoption paperwork to try to have the child legally adopted. Sometimes, and throughout this process, a lot of these kids are still seeing their biological parents, maybe monthly, maybe every other week. Even after the adoption, a lot of kids do have it, called an open adoption agreement where they still do see their biological families. Not every kid has that, but it's very common for kids to still have contact with their biological families. Because these are kids that love those people. I mean, that's their family. And most kids, not all, but most still feel love and allegiance toward their biological family. We try to keep siblings together as best as possible. You know, there should be sibling contact in almost all instances. You know, that would be a very rare thing for there to be any clinical reason not to have sibling contact. I mean, that would be almost unheard of. Kids generally should be seeing their siblings, sometimes grandparents.
That's actually good to know, because the article I read a couple of months ago, they were two brothers and they were in the foster care system, and the younger brother got adopted. Mm-hmm. And the older brother, he was probably about eight or nine, mm-hmm. but it didn't mention anything about them still being able to be in touch or communicate. So I'm really glad you've said that, because for the past couple of months, I've been thinking, this little boy, what you mean he's been ripped away from his baby brother? What happened?
I know. And that relies a lot on the good intentions and goodwill of the adoptive families. So the adoptive families should be educated in that. That's an extremely important thing to do. If the kids can't be kept together for some reason, some kids you just can't find a home for together in some situations. In some situations, clinically, they can't be together for some reason. So you try to keep them together. If they have to be separated, which you don't want to have happen, but if they do get separated, and some families might have five kids in the system. So, you know, you might be hard pressed to find one adoptive family for five kids.
Right.
So do your best to keep as many siblings together as you can. And you have to educate your adoptive families that that's an essential relationship. They should be seeing each other. They have a right to see each other. It's not the right thing to do to be like, this is my kid now. You don't see your brothers and sisters.
That's actually very comforting to know. Yeah.
And how well that's executed, again, depends on the people involved, depends on the families. You know, I've done things like, I had one of my, I'd say probably the most successful kind of sibling arrangement I had is in my career was, there was four of them. Let's see. Wait a minute. Four of the kids. And we were able to get two of them a job. So in one church, one family took the boy. One family took a teenage girl, 16-year-old girl, brother and sister, the same church in the same town. And then another family took the littlest, the two other girls. So we had four siblings in three families, but all like neighbors. So all neighbors in the same town. And the kids see each other. I mean, to this day, I'm in touch with all these families, but this was years ago. The kids are mostly grown now. But they, you know, they would see each other every week at church, at play dates, at family barbecues. Like, the families all work together closely.
Right.
Now, that's legitimate sibling contact. It's not like one supervised visit a year. It's like these kids actually grew up
together. You know,
family. Yeah, you know, extended family. And that worked out fantastic, because we had a cluster of families that came forward. Or like, I recruited at the church. I mean, you want to try to recruit. Recruiting in communities is important. If you can recruit in a community and say, hey, we've got this need, can we get a few families to step forward? You know, that's an option. That was a particularly like good outcome. That's kind of like the anti-Steven case that I've ever had, like the best outcome I've seen. And those kids have done really excellent. Like, they're in college, they're doing all four, doing really, really well. One of them's getting married, like they're doing great. And the families have just done very, very well. So, you know, you do get good outcomes like that. And those kids, despite their trauma history, at least the younger three of them, weren't so challenging. I mean, you had some challenges, but we're not like over the top challenging kids either. And one of them, the boy, it seemed like he had way more special needs when we placed him, like academic special needs. And it turns out he didn't. He needed a stable family to really work with him and work on his IEP and get him his services. And he was much less of like a special needs kid, it turned out. It just presented that way because of his history, which is not that uncommon either. Kids do a lot better than you think they might, because they have a stable family that's advocating for them and like really working with them. So you get some good stories like that. But so the siblings see each other, and the bio parents, that depends on, you know, the issues of the bio parents. But if they're, a lot of these biological parents are, they're not terrible people either. You know, like, people kind of think they're monsters or something. And I've known plenty of these families over the years, it would be a rare family that I really felt like a real like, oh, about, you know, like this is a really bad group or whatever. That's not typically the case. They're typically people that have their own trauma histories, their own tough backgrounds, mm-hmm. their own struggles, and have not been able to pull it together and have damaged their kids as a result. They're not typically like sadistic, awful people, you know?
And that's comforting to know, because you do, for some reason, you do have this picture and this image painted of these parents that put their children up for adoption, that they're either these really, they're either drug addicts or they were young and they abandoned their children, or like you said, they've been villainized.
So yeah, I mean, it might have. Yeah, I mean, and I think one thing there, I've never heard of a case where someone, aside from maybe in a newborn, like drop off at a church situation, I don't know, I've never heard of someone giving up their kid for adoption in foster care. Like, that's not even a thing. I mean, the people, the kids are taken away by the state because right. the department has concerns about safety. The parents might eventually sign over their rights in court if they just cannot get it together. But like, parents are not, I'm saying this, there's exception to everything, but by and large, parents are not like abandoning their kids to the system. Parents are typically fighting to get their kids back. And the system is in court with the parents because the system is saying these are not safe people. Mm-hmm. So most of these families, you know, do love the kids and want the kids back. And a lot of times the kids want to go home, you know, and it's really sad because you see kids that despite their abuse and neglect, they love, generally love their parents. Yeah. So some of them do keep seeing their parents. And I think foster parents and adoptive parents need to be aware that you don't get kind of like just an isolated child in a bubble. You know, they have families and pre-existing connections.
This is not television. It's not that, like I was saying to you, they just find this child that has right. no connections to anything or anywhere
right.
or anyone. And right. just, oh, you're mine now. And they just ride off into the sunset. So thank you, Liz, for letting us know. It's actually not typically like that because, again, the pictures that we see, we either see from one extreme to the next. We don't really see or hear much about the bit in the middle. We hear about those worst case scenarios where the baby was either born addicted to a substance, or there's just horrible neglect and abuse, or the other side where there's this perfect child just gets adopted. And if it was so perfect, why would they be in the system anyway? Mm-hmm. But we don't really hear that bit in the middle.
Yep. And I would say too, one thing, just like, I like to let people know this. So a lot of people, if you're a person that's interested in adopting a baby, and you don't have the resources to adopt privately, cause it is quite expensive. I mean, I think it can go $15,000-$20,000 above that. It's quite expensive. I'm not an expert on private adoption. It's quite expensive though. And cost prohibitive for plenty of people, you know? So if you really want to adopt a baby, it is possible to adopt a newborn through foster care. I've worked with tons of families that have done this, and that is free. Adopting from foster care is free. If anything, you get a stipend. I mean, not if anything, you do get a stipend. The state gives you money to help care for the kids mm-hmm. while they're in foster care, even post-adoption. Like in Massachusetts, they get their, you know, they have health insurance, they get their college basic tuition covered. Like there's support for families adopting from foster care. It's not a financial expense for families. Mm-hmm. I mean, it helped to raise the kids. So like you're spending that money to any subsidy you have to use to them. But there's clothing subsidies, Christmas gift subsidies, birthday money, like there's subsidies. If you really wanted to adopt a baby, you could, what you would do is become a foster parent for babies and understand that if a baby becomes legally free for adoption, you have a very good chance at being that adoptive family. Okay. If rights get terminated, the state's going to want to keep the baby unless a relative comes forward. They're going to probably, most cases, want to keep the baby in the stable family that they've already been being raised in.
Yeah.
So a lot of foster parents adopt that way, but it's always going to be a legal risk where the kid very well might be going back home because the goal is to always first is to reunify kids with their biological family. That's the first priority. So if you do that, you have to, Could you get your heart broken many times? Yes, you definitely could. But if you're willing to kind of see your role as like, a, you know, I'm here to help these babies as long as possible. And if the right scenario presents itself, I would love to adopt a baby. Then, I mean, that can and does happen all the time. Mm-hmm. I see that all the time. And these are families that don't have a lot of finances or any special anything. They're just foster parents that adopt the babies because they have had them the whole life, their whole lives. That happens a lot too. So, you know, this thing to consider if you're interested.
No, that's actually really good to know. So basically, what would you say to our listeners that is the route or the routes that they may want to, if they wanted to get into foster care or if they wanted to adopt? So the best way to know if you're ready for adoption, would you say that would be to start with being a foster parent?
That's a really good question. That's kind of a personal preference, and you can take both routes. That really is kind of a family decision. If you know you really, really want to adopt, that's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. I would probably still recommend you in your state, you would call your local, like in Massachusetts, DCF or whatever your local state services. I don't know what it is in Maryland, but your local state service mm-hmm. agency. And you would say, hey, I'm interested in adopting through foster care. And they'll put you in touch with the appropriate professionals. Okay. What you end up doing is getting linked up with an agency in your state that's contracted with like the Department of Children and Families. That would work with you. I would recommend if you really know you want to adopt, go the pre-adoptive route. You could still do what I just said, which is take mm-hmm. placements of not legally free infants. You could still do that. And then you just have to understand that it's not a guaranteed adoption. It's you're starting off parent. If you just kind of want to get your feet wet and see, hey, could this be something I could really do? Do I like this? You know, could I see myself adopting, but you're not so sure? Yeah, become a foster parent. I mean, there's always a need for foster parents. Mm-hmm. You can also become what's called a respite placement, which is just short term, like foster parents are away on a vacation and they need someone to watch kids for a week. You can do respite. You can do emergency hotline, which is just an overnight if a kid's getting pulled from their family and they need an emergency call. Okay. That's more high intensity, but short term. Mm-hmm. So you might call at 10 p.m., say, hey, we have a 5-year-old girl. We just pulled her from her home for abuse. Can you take her for a night or two? You can do that. There's different ways to get, this is something your local office could help you figure out what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then you get your license. Foster parents need to be licensed and pre-adoptive parents need to be licensed through the state. That whole process can take many, many months. So if you're kind of thinking about it and you want to learn more, I always encourage people, call your office, get going on the process, because you don't want to feel like, you know, you want to get ahead of it. You want to be licensed. That can take months and months. It's a lot of waiting. You have to wait for a training course. You have to wait for your home study. So if you're considering it, seriously considering it, not just like a vague idea, but you're really considering it, make the call and initiate the process. Mm-hmm. So that you can figure out if you want to do it and get your licensing like going so that you're actually eligible to do it when the time comes that you're ready to kind of pull the trigger on it. You can, mm-hmm. you can actually, so that's what, you know, I would probably recommend.
Thank you. That's all good advice. And that's good information as well, because a lot of people, as with many things in life, a lot of reasons why people don't do something is because they don't know where to start.
Yep, definitely, for sure. Yep, and your office can direct you to the right step. I'm saying your office, like, you know, in Massachusetts, it's called the Department of Children and Families. It's like social services. If you make a general inquiry call and say, hey, I'm considering becoming a foster or adoptive parent through foster care, they'll direct you over to those people. It's a first call. You're going to get a social worker respond to you who can tell you what your local steps are. You know, if you're in your listeners could be anywhere really. So in your local area, they'll explain to you what you need to do. But I think what I outlined is probably fairly the case, you know, like slight differences. You can also look at Wendy's Wonder. If you look at the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption online, or Adopt US Kids, Adopt Us Kids, those are two of the major national organizations that You can see like profiles of kids that are waiting to be adopted just to get some kind of like, oh, okay, here's like a kind of a brief look at some kids that are eligible for adoption. Okay. You probably are not going to like appear in a necessarily be ready to adopt one of those kids right now, but
breaking up a little bit. So are you saying that there was a national agency? What is the name of that national agency?
Yeah, there's two big ones are Dave Thomas Foundation. That's the founder of Wendy's. They have a program called Wendy's Wonderful Kids, and the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption is a huge national adoption organization for foster care. There's also Adopt Us Kids, Adopt US Kids. So that's American foster adoptions like across the country.
Okay.
So you can look at some like, you know, every state will have they're called photo listings. Like in Massachusetts, our organization is called MARE. That's Massachusetts Adoption Resource Exchange. Probably every state has one. That's ours. So there's a photo listing of the kids that are all the kids right now that are legally free for adoption will be photo listed. So you can actually see the kids. There's videos on tons of kids, video profiles. And, you know, by the time you're done with your own paperwork, you meaning someone interested, those kids might or might not be available for adoption. But it's just to give you kind of like an idea, like, oh, here are some kids that might be eligible for adoption. And plenty of other kids are going to be not photo listed because their cases are not legal. They're not legally free yet. Right. So they're not going to have their photos listed. So there's a lot more kids than what you see just in those pictures, but that's kind of like some look at the kids. I will say those cases, the photo listings tend to be kind of the harder to place kids, because if it's a kid that has not very many issues, and is younger or just easy to place for whatever reason, there'll be a line of people that want to be placed with the kid. So their social worker doesn't need to like recruit as hard for them, because there's just going to be people coming forward saying like, we would like to adopt this, you know, 3-year-old with no particular special needs or whatever. Older kids have a tougher time. I'd say once you get over like age 8 or so, 10, it starts to get a little harder. But those kids are adoptable. I mean, we place teens all the time. Teens do get adopted. Some people love teens. Teens can be really fun to work with. You know, like I've always worked with teens. I really like teens. And some people just want to adopt teens. They don't want little babies and they don't want to deal with any of that, you know.
Want them already, you know, housebroken, self-sufficient.
Yeah, they can do some things.
A lot of people like myself that are not morning people would like to know that, okay, you've got your breakfast, you can get up and you can go and help yourself.
Yeah, and those kids need to be adopted too. You don't want those kids hanging out to dry, you know. They need to be adopted also, if possible. Yeah. So any other questions, or I have to wrap it up pretty soon because my work, but any other things that would be useful?
No, because I just wanted to ask you just a final point. So I think you've touched on this. So if anybody is seriously thinking about either adopting or considering foster care, what would you recommend that they do? Well, you have already said get yourself licensed, but what would you really recommend that they do outside of getting themselves licensed, if it's something that they thought, you know something, I think I can do this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I honestly think the first step is really calling your agency to have a social worker come meet with you and discuss with you what you're thinking of, because people don't generally really understand this system very well. But if you express interest, you'll have a live person talking to you about your family, your situation, making sure your house and your setup is even appropriate for this. So I do think that's a good first step. You know, before you get down a rabbit hole of like, I'm interested in this kid I saw online in Georgia, you know, like you can kind of peruse that just to be like, okay, I kind of get a sense of things. But I would call your local social service agency and link up with an actual person locally that can explain to you the local rules. Mm-hmm. They'll come out to meet with you. They'll do a discussion with you and a look at your living space to be like, okay, some people, you might find out there's something that you don't even realize that you're not even eligible to do this for some reason. Like, you want to figure out with a local person, is this the right path for me? You might clarify with that same, I'm saying local person, your local social service, DSS, DCF, whatever it's called where you are. If you talk to them and you realize, hey, no, I thought I might want to do this, but I really, really want, I don't want to get my heart broken by having a kid in and out of the home. I really want a newborn. I really have my heart set on a newborn. then maybe private adoption is better for you. Maybe international adoption is better for you. Mm-hmm. Someone can help you think that through. But that really needs to be, I think, a discussion with a professional in your area and you, you know, and then you can decide what the next appropriate step would be. That's what I would recommend.
Great. Thank you. And Liz, finally, so I know that you have your website and you blog and you have all sorts of articles. So where can people find you?
Yeah. So this is kind of, so I have just opened a private practice as a therapist. I am going to be working with kids in the foster care system, but not exclusively. Mm-hmm. I don't have that website up yet. So I would say if someone needed to get in touch with me, my blog, which is not specific to adoption, it's a general parenting kind of blog, mm-hmm. is called A Mothership Down. And my contact information is all on that website. So if someone had a question, they could definitely reach me through A Mothership Down. And I have a Facebook page and Instagram, same name.
And it's amothershipdown.com.
Yep, that's right.
So Liz, thank you. Yeah. I have learned so much and I'm very, very grateful because as I mentioned earlier, the dangers that we all fall into, we watch too much television and we get this pie in the sky, it's all roses view of adoption, or we do get the other really gritty end. So thank you very much for sharing your experience with us and just letting us know the truth behind fostering and adoption.
No problem. This was great. And let me know when the podcast comes out.
I will do, Liz. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was nice talking to you.
Thank you. Take care now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. And as Liz mentioned, if you are considering adoption or would like to know more information about foster caring and how to get into being a foster parent, how to become a foster parent, please, a quick Google search looking for your local social services department. They will be able to give you all the information that you need. There's also many, many websites across the world giving information on adoption, the process, the criteria. So if it's something that you are considering, interested in, or just even had a fleeting thought about and wanted to know more, please get in touch with your local social services department and they will be able to give you more information. And as always, thank you for listening. Until next time.
Thank you for spending time with us. We're already looking forward to the next episode of This is Conversations with Allison J. The journey to here. Until next time, honor, respect, and blessings to you all. If you want to connect, visit AllisonJ.net. That's AllisonJaye.net. Allison with one L, as she is the one and only.